You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Robotics experts will be gathering in Boston this week for the 2018 Robotics Summit and Showcase. It's an event targeted at professionals primarily, but robots are becoming a bigger and bigger presence in all of our lives, so we thought we'd get a preview from one of the organizers. Steve Crow is the editor of The Robot Report. He joins me now via Skype. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
We've got to start with basics, because when somebody says the word robot, I still have this very antiquated image that pops up in my head of, you know, like a square-shouldered, square-headed humanoid kind of thing, right, that walks really horribly. But when we talk about robotics as it's showing up in our lives, I mean, that could be a huge range of things. Is a Roomba a robot? Is Alexa a robot? What is a robot at this point?
You're starting me off with the tough questions here. You know, it's a great question. So, you know, I either get responses similar to what you just said, or a lot of people go to the, you know, the Rosie the robot from the Jetsons.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, the truth of the matter is that there's really no universal answer to what a robot is. If you took, you know, let's say you took 10 of the world's leading roboticists, locked them in a room for a week and told them to deliberate and come up with an answer as to what a robot is, you would have 10 different answers, right? So a lot of people, and this is what we're trying to follow with the Robotics Summit and Showcase, we're trying to follow the sense, think, and act paradigm and add in some degree of autonomy, right? So what this means is sensing. You know, robots employ some sort of sensing technology to acquire information about their environment that they're operating in.
So they're looking, they're feeling, they're
exactly
smelling something. Yeah.
Smelling, that's not here just yet, but it's coming. thinking is that they can take that information that they've acquired through the sensors, and then they can process it
and produce outputs and make a decision about what they should do next. And then acting is that they ultimately make a decision.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could argue Alexa is hearing your voice, thinking, I don't know, processing it in some way, and then acting by potentially, you know, order more toilet paper.
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, there's, again, my personal opinion is it's not, but many people do consider it a consumer robot. You know, these virtual assistants, you know, a lot of folks consider them, you know, some sort of robotics system. We don't, but, you know, Amazon's coming out with they're currently working on a consumer robot for the home. Nobody really knows what it is at the moment, but a lot of people are speculating that it might be some form of Alexa on wheels.
One thing that has cropped up in the news in the past year several times is the idea of soft robotics. What are soft robots and why are they important?
Yeah, so this is actually a topic we'll be covering extensively at the Robotics Summit and Showcase. It's really exactly what it sounds like, right? So soft robotics, they're robots that are made of soft materials. You know, back to your example at the top of the interview, you know, you're used to this boxy, rigid robot that is made of hard materials, right? So what they're doing now is they've developed soft materials that just has a lot of different benefits to it. And a lot of this stems from what people call bio-inspired engineering, which is attempting to build robots that, again, resemble nature, whether it's humans, whether it's animals, different types of beings and creatures that are very efficient. There's a company based in Cambridge, Massachusetts called Soft Robotics, funny enough, that spun out of Harvard. And they're making a soft robotic gripper that can flexibly manipulate and adapt to objects that it's trying to pick up. Fragile objects like an egg, for example, that traditional rigid grippers might not really be well suited to handle. So that's one of the main benefits. Another great example, exoskeletons. Again, traditionally, exoskeletons are very rigid. They're very bulky. They're very heavy. And they're not really conducive the way that they're designed to help somebody, you know, regain their walking ability. So again, Harvard is, they're building a soft exoskeleton. It's just better designed. You know, it's that simple. It weighs a lot less. It has less of a interference with the wearer's, you know, biomechanics, so that they're able to walk more naturally. So they're cheaper to develop. There's a lot of benefits to it. That part of the industry is quite young. So, you know, it's definitely an area to watch going forward. And we'll be talking a lot about it next week.
I'm talking with Steve Crow. He's editor of The Robot Report. You've mentioned both startups, spin-off companies, universities, when we're thinking about how robots actually and robotic technology actually gets developed, how much of that is happening in academic science and how much of that is happening in the private sector with real commercial endpoints in mind?
I would say, you know, we keep track of investments in robotics every month on the Robot Report. And to date, in 2018, there's been $2.3 billion invested in robotics companies. Now, we're using somewhat of a broad definition for what a robotics company is. That includes some artificial intelligence companies and stuff like that. But there's a tremendous amount of investment going into it. And for me, I would say most of the innovation happens at the university level, right? So a couple examples, iRobot, probably the most well-recognized robotic company in the world. They spun out of MIT. Soft Robotics, the company I've mentioned that's in Cambridge, they spun out of Harvard. Right Hand Robotics, which is a great gripping and manipulation company, that was started at Harvard and Yale. Universal Robots, the leading collaborative robotics company that's based in Denmark, spun out of university. Boston Dynamics, spin-off out of MIT. So I think a lot of the initial groundwork, a lot of the innovation initially takes place at the academic level. And then, of course, you know, they need that funding to a lot of times take their efforts to the next level. So maybe that's where a much larger company comes in.
$2.3 billion in investment is pretty significant. And we talk a lot about, you know, the robots are coming. Robotics are going to be a bigger part of our lives. But they're still pretty limited. I mean, if you think about if we're going to say that Alexa is not a robot, maybe a Roomba is. Most of us are not living with a robot yet. Where are robotics already in action, and when are they going to hit our homes for real?
Yeah, that's pretty far off, to be honest. You know, besides, you know, a Roomba, you know, a vacuuming robot, I think they're really not even close to being here in a useful way, to be honest. You see a lot of these consumer robotics companies, they start off saying that they're going to, you know, create a robot for your home. And then when they get into the weeds and they start trying to produce these systems at an affordable cost, and able to do something that is useful for your home, it gets very hard to do. I produced a conference at the Consumer Electronics Show this past January, and iRobot was one of our panelists. And, you know, Chris Jones, their VP of technology, was saying, you know, they have a million ideas for different types of consumer robots that they would like to build for people for their homes. It's just not practical right now. So where do you see robots? You know, you see robots in a lot of commercial settings, a lot of industrial settings, manufacturing settings, settings that, you know, require repetitive tasks to be done. One of the quickest growing markets right now is e-commerce. Right, warehouses and logistics. It's, you know, referred to a lot as the Amazon effect. Amazon bought a company called Kiva Systems, I think, in 2012 for somewhere in the ballpark of $750 million. And, you know, these robots simply shuttle materials back and forth from one point to the next. And it saves these companies a ton of time, increases their productivity significantly, and allows the human employees to work on tasks that robots really don't excel at right now.
Or potentially puts people out of a job. I mean, there's a lot of concern about the loss of human jobs to robotics in manufacturing or distribution or whatever. What's the perspective from the robotics industry? Are robots going to be the end of human work?
It's a great question. In all honesty, it's a PR nightmare for those who are, you know, building robotics systems. I think anybody who says robots won't have a negative impact on jobs, I'm not sure that they're being completely honest with you. One of the easiest, in my opinion, examples is if you look at self-driving cars, right? So they're not here yet. They're not going to be here for quite some time. I think a lot of the coverage that you see is a little overhyped in their abilities. But if self-driving cars and self-driving taxis do become mainstream, that's going to have a significant impact on people's jobs, right? I don't know how many millions of taxi drivers there are in the United States, but there's a lot of them. But to your point about the warehousing and the manufacturing jobs, a lot of those jobs are low-paying jobs. They're not glamorous.
But they pay the bills. They put food on the table.
They do. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to the people who are producing these robots. Of course, they'll tell you that that robots are designed to be tools to increase productivity, right, at an employer, which then will help increase a company's bottom line, that will help them create more jobs and have more opportunities for people. You know, look at Amazon. You know, Amazon.com has had a profound impact in a negative way on retailers across the country. If you look at the number of retailers who are closing, physical retail stores that are closing, it's tremendous. Automated checkouts at stores, you know, have potentially put people out of work. Automated toll booths, you know, here in Massachusetts, they just recently got rid of, you know, the human toll takers. You know, those are jobs that are lost, but nobody seems to, at least at a large scale, complain about those jobs because it's convenient for them, right? I can get out of the grocery store faster. I don't have to sit in traffic on the pike. The internet has taken tons of jobs, but we're not going to stop using the internet anytime soon. So I think it comes back to, you know, when these machines get closer and closer to being humans, is there some sort of negative reaction to that? There will be significant job displacement, but there's always going to be work to be done. There'll be new jobs created, and we have to make sure that the people in this country, the people in the world, are trained and educated to be able to fulfill those jobs.
Steve Crow is editor of The Robot Report. Steve, thanks so much, and enjoy the Robotics Summit and Showcase this week.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Appreciate the opportunity. Would love to talk to you guys anytime.
Up next, the unexpected connection between eugenics and the conservation movement of the early 20th century. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.